let me welcome all of you members, the panel of professional services and our guests in our agenda for today, members, will be a briefing by the Department on Electronic Monitoring, also sent apology. Members, this issue that we are going to discuss today, electronic monitoring, I think that members of this committee, especially veterans of the committee, like the civil citizen, Mr. Shoktorov, will know what we are talking about, electronic monitoring. Not the inmate tracking like in KwaZulu-Natal. This one is different from that one. And I will ask the department, Mr. Mutegi, to take us through the briefing, and I am sure that members went through the document. Let me first establish, all of you got the document in hand, because I have said to the commission that it is unacceptable that we are getting the document the day before. We want the document at least 7 days before, so that we must prepare ourselves in our meeting, so before the meeting, so that we can ask a relevant question, not come here and sit and even waste the time and fight with the department, because it's very much important that we, as public representatives, must do our work and very properly. And we are not here to come and waste taxpayers' money to fly people all over from Victoria to here. We want to know. This thing of electronic monitoring is an old story, and I wish that we can have a conversation today in this meeting on this issue of electronic monitoring. Mr. Mutegi, let me welcome you. You are going to introduce your delegation and then go over to electronic monitoring. I think that we are going to do it this way. You are giving us on electronic monitoring. After that, we will go over to inmate tracking. Otherwise, we are going to confuse the two issues. Over to you, Mr. Mutegi.
Thanks so much, thanks. Of course, we tried whatever we could, except that we improve all the time, and so we made sure that we don't fight about which honorable members received a day before the actual. So I think for my part, this is quite a blessing in the context of this presentation. But thanks so much, Shepherd, once again. Honorable members, it's again an opportunity for us to be here and to talk with you about these issues. Let me first introduce the team that we have with me today. On my immediate left, we have Ms. Sharon Kunen. Ms. Sharon Kunen is responsible for social integration aspects of our budget and the program, which has got a serious relevance to the issues of electronic monitoring, as you will soon see as we make this presentation. And then we have Ms. Jack Shilupan. Mr. Jashilubani is our Departmental Information Technology Officer, Executive Commission, responsible for all our technologies, innovation, and development. and then we have the people that you work with in the ministry, a team that is led by Mr. Lebon, immediately head of media. Secondly, of the electronic monitoring, as you indicated, that only the veteran, possibly like yourself, would know. Way back in 1999, and I think the last of the presentation that they made the portfolio committee around the specific issue was on the 10th of October 2000. That is another part of the last the presentation that was made around that specific issue. Now, you would also know that this was essentially a pilot process that was conducted by the department. That is one thing. And then there is a project that indicated the session of the inmate breaking, which of course I think at the moment I should avoid speaking about at all for obvious reasons of possible confusion. But let me say that in the outset that the part of the general reason why we could not continue with electronic monitoring at that time was as a result of ourselves asking one specific question about what exactly does electronic monitoring assist the department with. And of course we came down to a conclusion that there are multiple sets of reasons that include maximization, amongst others, maximization of community involvement and executing the court instructions about ensuring that these people serve their sentence, even when they are not necessary within the confines of the prison walls. And at the time, the technological development were not as advanced as it is now, and we'll give you a feedback somewhat around that. But not as advanced as they are now. And consequently, the department decided not to continue with electronic monitoring at that time, given the technological innovation, especially where the technology could not have a reach to the rural sections of our country. We'll give you a feedback indication that will provide the process for that specific issue. Of course, we stopped as a department at that time, but the discussions around electronic monitoring did not stop. We have been approached by several people and so on around the need for the department to proceed and procure electronic monitoring. But we were not naive. We knew then that the technology was not up to the level where it could assist us. And sometimes many of these people were private agencies that we had no confidence in, that they knew adequately what they were thinking about. We have taken a resolve, Chairperson, as you speak today. We have taken a resolve, as we speak today, to proceed with electronic monitoring as one thing. We continue to say ourselves that electronic monitoring is not an alternative to management of overcrowding. So it is not at all intended to address particularly the issues of overcrowding. It must be used for a whole range of different reasons which will apply in the course of this presentation. When we took the specific decision in the course of this year to proceed with the electronic monitoring, we were again aware that we do not have a budget specifically to deal with this. And so we are on an accelerated route to complete aspects of the work that needs to be done in advance before we ask for money, before the time that is required for us to submit our budget estimate with treasure in the course of this. So I'm hoping we'll be able to finish that. In the context of this presentation, Shepard, what we are going to try and do is to provide you with that bit of the plan so that we enable everybody to run at speed with us around it. To answer a question exclusively about what exactly is electronic monitoring and what target of our inmate population is intended to address, and also then to present yourself about what plans are we having at the moment to proceed with electronic monitoring. In the presentation that we have given, we have circulated to yourself, we have tried to provide a list of applications so that everybody is with us separately as you talk. And so I'm going to ask Mr. Shuriban to take you through the remainder of the presentation, starting from the background of the project and what the electronic monitoring is and what steps are we going to take to implement. Thanks.
Thanks, Professor. I think some tech has already progressed in terms of electronic monitoring. He has mentioned that, of course, from the department point of view, it's not yet validated or overcrowded. But we want, and I think we have said this before, to encourage community participation in enhancing rehabilitation of people in our care. We also believe very strongly as a department that technology remains a very strong enabler of improvement of service delivery. Those are the two things that we wanted to mention, I think, in the beginning. With regards to the background on what happened previously around our implementation of electronic monitoring, we worked on a pilot in the late 90s. In Pretoria. Part of that pilot showed a number of things. One is the fact that electronic monitoring was a very useful tool that we can use in the department. But like Ms. Amteke said, it's the fact that most of the area and where most of our offender population is, there was no infrastructure that could support electronic monitoring at the time. And therefore, that's one of the reasons why we had to stop the pilot at the time. At the time, electronic monitoring, of course, required us to have a telephone unit in everybody's home. And I think at the time, telephone penetration in the country was in about 10% about 5% of the country then in the late 90s. And that was really something that was a huge drawback for us in terms of going forward. But now, we all know that technology has sort of penetrated about 90% of the country. There are huge developments around mobile communication, such as the cellular infrastructure, which covers virtually most of the country. So this is also one more reason that essentially says to the department, it's now time to go ahead and relook at electronic monitoring. We have global positioning systems, we have global systems for mobile communication, which is really where we are talking about our mobile communication. From a department point of view, we want to use electronic monitoring, I think, to assist us in monitoring the following people who are under our care. One, we can use it for probationers. We want to use it for monitoring of parolees, that is all the parole conditions. Offenders that have got fines, awaiting trial detainees, whether they have got bail or without bail. Pay parolees, those are the ones that can go out to work and come back after hours. And also offenders who are delivering to communities. And also those offenders that will probably be going out on occasional leave, whether it's for a funeral or a weekend out. We have a spreadsheet that we have a table that we have put forward there just to show the figure of the people that we are talking about. We are, and as we speak now, we have about 8,883 persons under correctional supervision. we have a potential of 8,069 people where we could convert, synthesis could be converted from the separation into operational supervision. Those are just indicative because it's only all about 2,143 people. That's the potential. Where we can potentially use the instrument monitoring to monitor those tests. We have also provided a snapshot of the table. It's just a different form of the table, but it speaks the same figures as well. So I'm not going to repeat those figures. One of the more compelling reasons why we would want to employ electronic monitoring, of course, is that it gives us control from a department point of view. We would be able, from a department point of view, to reduce cases of intimidation and corruption. One of the things that happens currently when we are monitoring people, we send vehicles out with people. We would probably be trying to monitor a certain intimidator, but our own officials would decide to go to Ocean Group. And that does not necessarily, we are not necessarily sure that the person has not gone to social group. So the monitoring will essentially give us the right location of where a person being monitored by us is. It will also, but apart from doing that, it will also enable us to monitor conditions such as no-go zones for people that we are monitoring. If, for instance, you are being monitored by us and we have defined no-go zones because a potential witness takes in a particular area, we will be able to know that you have breached that condition. You have then moved into an area where you could potentially intimidate a witness. So that's the other kind of control that it gives us as a department. You can monitor conditions literally on the minute. It also does enhance community involvement in rehabilitation because the person is in the community. The community can then take an active role in terms of assisting with rehabilitation. Of course, we are going to talk about some of the challenges. We can also reduce the prison population, which will eliminate or reduce part of our overcrowding. It will also afford our own employees, our own officials, the time, I think, to focus more on rehabilitation. It will also, we have from studies that are conducted that there is a potential savings from the use of electronic monitoring. So we can be able to save some money by using technology rather than incarcerating people. We also believe if that option exists, the judiciary may be more inclined towards putting people on electronic monitoring. In terms of the electronic monitoring devices, and this is not a comprehensive description of all the devices that are there, but the basic system would really contain an implant or bracelet. It would be able to emit signals through a base station or a field monitoring device. So we would have wireless communication infrastructure that the bracelet or the implant will essentially be able to communicate with. This device will be able to obviously record the location of the person. We will be able to set boundaries, and I spoke about go and no-go zone. And we could even use time to find that the person is allowed to be within this place, between this time and that time, you know, depending on the conditions of parole. We would say that we have two systems. One would be an active system. That means that the device itself, the anklet or the bracelet, is an active transceiver. That means it transmits a signal to a base station or whatever, and it receives signals from there. So the device that is on the present, it's essentially an active device. It means it must have more intelligence to be able to communicate its location and all the other information that is needed by us. It is programmable to the member zones that are hosting it. As I said before, you can also have a passive device. A passive device essentially does not require a lot of intelligence, and this is the kind of system that would effectively be cheaper. This is where the device receives from a central control room or a base station information. The central, so the base station would then be the one that calls the device that is on the person being monitored. So you need more intelligence essentially on the network rather than on the device that is on the offender. But it would effectively be able to do the other things such as remember the time zone and all the other things that an active device would do. We have also tried to put some pictures of some of the basic components of the system. Depending on how much you want to monitor the condition, and of course, if the condition is what you want to monitor is more, it will increase the cost of the system itself. And as you can see there, we can also have a mini breathalyzer. That means if you don't want somebody to drink alcohol as one of the conditions, you could essentially be able to monitor that person. That person could essentially be able to breathe into the device and can then be able to identify that person, of course, and then tell whether their alcohol level is high or not. We have looked as part of our interrogation of electronic monitoring at a number of countries that are doing electronic monitoring. That list is not exhaustive really, it's just a few of the countries that we look at. One of them is Canada, we have the United Kingdom, we have Australia, we have New Zealand, we have Singapore. Like I said, it's not an exhaustive list. It's just a few of the countries that we look at in our path to look at best practice. In terms of the challenges, it's an issue of coverage and reach of ICT infrastructure. Although I have already mentioned the issue of the fact that now GSM covers almost literally the whole country, but we now have an additional challenge around the stability of power in the country. So that impact on the ICT infrastructure itself, because without power, we won't be able to run this. I've mentioned electricity together with telephone infrastructure. We do not have, and Mr. Mtiki has mentioned this in the beginning, currently a budget for implementation of electronic monitoring. It's something that we are working on the federal funds. One of the issues that may be a challenge is the stigmatization around the person putting on an emblem or a bracelet. Fortunately, we take some of these devices are becoming smaller. We hope the community will be more receptive of people that are being monitored. There is an issue of public intolerance and the lack of support system and residential addresses where offenders can be typically supervised. And the fact that electronic monitoring, while it allows us to monitor, it does not stop the offender. People can go ahead and do offense. But the future of it is that we can be able to keep track of them in terms of location and all that. In terms of the way forward, we have for the past year been in partnership, engaged in a partnership with the CSIR, which is really the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research. The CSIR has got the technological expertise. They give us the advice around many other areas of technology where we do not have the skill. So we have that partnership with them in whatever areas that we engage on around technology. We sought their advice. We have done a technology best practice review, and we are continuing to do that. We are doing a cost-benefit analysis around electronic monitoring. That's really to assess it, because some of the studies internationally have shown that it is cheaper than incarceration. So we want to do our own study to validate that kind of information. And I think our previous implementation in 1999 did show that there are potential savings around. We are trying to complete the planning process in some details as mentioned this, in time to allow us to budget for 2009 and 2010. Hopefully, we may be implementing electronic monitoring very soon. And I think that, again, where we would want to change up this part of the system. Thank you.
Now that's the question and the part of our presentation. I hope we have been able to send the message to yourself that there is a high potential benefit for electronic monitoring for the department. I hope we have been able to demonstrate to you that our commitment to do this same for the issues of the budget has got every likelihood at the moment, at least on the basis of the studies that we've conducted, to reduce the cost of our current supervision of people that are outside, increase the potential of increasing those numbers. And that in general is the basis of our resolve at the moment to proceed with the electronic monitoring. There's no going back. The only issues that we need to be able to deal with at the moment are issues around the budget.
No, thank you very much, Mr. Mseki and Mr. Chuck Shurban. Thank you very much for the presentation. I'm going to open up for questions for clarification. I'm also having questions. I think that myself, Cindy, we have received your apology. It's not your mistake. It's SAA. But SAA, the plain one, the lady. But welcome, Cindy. You have the document. We have Mr. Sell, Mr. Kipido, Mengwe.
Thank you very much indeed, Chair. Can I ask three questions? The first concerns the cost, because in the presentation on page 3 of the document that I have, this is the private shared incarceration costs R14.75 and electronic monitoring costs R12.82, but a little way further on there's a cost per person per day of R123 per day. So I'd just like a little bit of clarification on that, because it would seem that there are two sets of issues here. The one set of issues are the accuracy and reliability of these systems. Are they going to work? How accurate are they? Can they be relied upon? And the other one is the cost side of it. But if you can get both the costs right and the accuracy right, then it would seem to me that you are going to build a lot of confidence in the system, which is then going to allow judges to impose non-custodial sentences in appropriate cases, which would then have a very profound effect on prison overcrowding. Because instead of there being an automatic assumption that anybody who offends goes to prison, it opens up a range of non-custodial alternatives that have the confidence of the judiciary. So the question that I'd like to know is, what are the costs? What are the relative costs at this stage of the investigation? Secondly, what is the degree of accuracy? Can you tell that somebody who's got a break that is in a particular house in a particular suburb, or is it less precise than that? And then, based on those two things, what is the department's view of how this would be received by the judiciary? Thank you, Jim.
Come in the middle, and then you can move freely around here. Because I can see maybe not ephemeral, maybe if you are fine, it's fine. I just wanted to help you, but it's fine if you are fine. Can you see this, TJ?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Salt has dealt with some of the questions. I am concerned, you know, we were told back in 2000 that this was now feasible and it was going to happen and the department was committed to it and it was going to work. We now have 8 years down the line and we're still being told that it's feasible, the department was committed to it and it's going to work. What guarantees do you have, given the fact that you now raise the concern of the Epsom Power, what guarantees do we have that the department is going to get this onto the budget for 2009-2010 and it is going to be implemented in 2009-2010?
Thank you. I understand from the presentation, Chairperson, that we will not be able to stop reopening. I'd like to ask, after a prisoner has been I'm sorry, Chairperson. Yeah, let's let him just take the time to receive what I've said. I do understand that that we might not be able to stop the legal thinking and such. But to what extent can we go and maybe keep on monitoring prisoners that have been freed, where we have established, as you said, the potential to reoffend? Will it be too costly if the cost has been calculated in the beginning? I have the feeling that if we could continue some sort of monitoring, maybe we'll come in to the next presentation, but that we could have prevent people from becoming involved in crime soon after the meeting.
Thank you, Chairperson. And also thank you for the presentation. Chairperson, I thank you first for getting the statement in time because it gave me to do my homework over the weekend. I've got many questions, but I'll try to make you leave on another round and ask another question. In terms of the inmate in taking Chairperson, I want to know from the department.
We are not taking inmate.
For what inmate? Okay. Alright, okay. What type of resource do you really have at the level of the material, personnel, and financial in order to detect electronic monitoring as part of community correction? That's one. Question two, what is the level of actual implementation of the ground of electronic monitoring? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
The use of the weight in calculation is placed in that context. What we really were referring to is our daily monitoring and supervision of the inmates. The average cost per day in the absence of electronic monitoring. That's what we're really referring to. that if we include the electronic monitoring, it will cost two plus minus two rand less. But this are the results of the pilot study that was conducted in 1999. The second message that I hope that we will be able to pass on to your friends with respect to the 2023 is to make a comparative cost of the cost when a person is in price and the potential saving if and when that person could have been sent to correctional supervision as opposed to being in price. And so when we quantify those costs, the message that we said that we are able to demonstrate to you that for the potential time calculated to the contrary made up of people who say, made up of people who sentences could be contested, and people with fines and so on. And therefore, each one of those people cost us plus minus that a day is assessing some time. But if we use the term motor, those costs will instantly drop by a huge margin to our daily monitoring cost. But if we add electronic monitoring over and above that, those costs is going up. That's really the message we wanted to demonstrate. I'll ask Mr. Shivan to join us again to answer your question about the accuracy of the technology. We're not going to be giving you guarantees about whether or not, and I think that's the only reason why we kept on making an emphasis about the budget constraints. What I think we can perhaps be appealing for from your side is to partner us in this journey. You approve our budget, you have the chances of negotiating with Treasury in the same way as we would, but pass across this message. We are saying we're committed to it. At best by June, in the partnership we have with CSIR, at best by June, we will have a cost-benefit analysis that will provide us with a bit more of accurate figures about what this thing will cost us. On the basis of that, we want to take those figures and to Treasury and say this is what we require if we are to implement it. Our view that it will take for itself for a period of time if you compare the cost accuracy. Electronic monitoring, answering the question of the honourable member, it's not intended entirely to substitute our monitoring responsibilities. It's a supplementary tool to the work that we are supposed to do. All it will do is to give us warning within a minute. At the moment, we are reliant on an official driving there or being informed back. But we will know from electronic monitoring that this person is crossing the boundaries that are demarcated for him or her in terms of the location. Alternatively, in terms of time, we will also know that this person at 8 o'clock is not in the residential place where he's supposed to be. And therefore, it enables us to react. And when we react, we will realize that we're also reacting knowing the location of where this person is. And so it enhances our chances of limiting but not preventing to offending altogether. I will only know around that time after we have conducted our studies with CSIR about the resources we require. At the moment we can give you, which I can ask Ms. Kunana to do, we can give you our staff establishment and the numbers of offices that we have for community corrections. My general suspicion is that when we deploy electronic monitoring, we'll cut down on the numbers of personnel, we'll cut down on the numbers of offices we need. That's just my general, in the absence of any quantified work done as yet.
Chairperson, I'm not very much technology research. I just wanted to add a lot of things.
Electronics
on you, okay, I'll be there. That's of the pilot project. Okay, I just wanted to add on the issue of resources. That currently at the Office of Community Corrections, we have a staff number of 1,806, and we are short staff because in terms of the police establishment, we need to have 2,020 staff members in our police establishment. So we are running short of staff. And nationwide, we have 194 offices of community corrections, which manages parolees and offenders in our system. And what Mr. Mubeki was indicating is that with electronic monitoring, we are saying we need to, you know, to access those offenders and those parolees and parolees, probationers and parolees, that we cannot actually monitor, you know, during for house detention and so forth. And then, but now, electronic monitoring in due course will assist us with you know, trying to complement the shortages that you are having in terms of resources. But as Mr. Mbeki has indicated, that we also want our officials at Community Corrections to also be busy with a physical monitoring. And at the same time, we want them to enforce rehabilitation. That is the, you know, the crux, you know, of electronic monitoring. That whilst we will be utilizing the current resources that you are having, electronic monitoring will actually be able to go into those areas where we cannot access to, like, for instance, your KZN, they're in rural areas where, you know, our members cannot actually access those areas. So this is the you know, the main or the rationale behind the electronic monitoring.
On shortage of staff, I'm very much sure, and I for the first time I want to agree with Mr. Mbeki and the party. I think that this electronic monitoring will really assist. You see, Nangwena is doing this, that's why she's asking this question, community correction issue. And they are always complaining because we are visiting their offices. But to introduce this electronic monitoring will really assist them with that. Mr. Mbeki, you on page 4, conversion of incarceration into correction. How many is 8,069? You are saying people that are already ready to go. With other words, these people are already having dates. They have appeared before the parole board, the CMC parole board, but they are waiting for their dates to come. It's clarity that I need. The other issue that you must clarify, this electronic monitoring, won't it help further? Because I don't see it yet. People with less serious offenses, people sitting there for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, who is not a threat to society, won't this thing also help? My last question. It's not about saying, you must correct me and respond. It's not about saving in when you deal with crime, but rather, according to me, is to address the issue of putting Bishop Tolo into a prison to become a criminal. You are putting him there, innocent, from a rural area. You are putting him in prison for 3 months, 6 months. He is learning the ropes in prison. Now this issue, won't it also help in addressing
That's it. Who sent Mengwenya? Mengwenya sent it up. Bishop Cholo sent it up. He got it all.
Thank you, Chairperson. One of my follow-up question, Chairperson. I want to understand in terms of our constitution rights. That how do you determine that electronic monitoring and inmate tracking do not infringe individual offenders' constitutional rights to privacy?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. I seem to be doubting so much, Mr. Chairperson. I want to find out from the department that if this system of monitoring is so advantageous, why is it that the countries of the world are so few that are taking the advantage of this? Thank you.
Let me just start with the question of Paris that you asked at the beginning. That specific slide is giving you statistics of our current population outside in the community correction. What it intends to convey is that every single one of this group is a legitimate target of electronic monitoring. That's the people that if we were to monitor 52,000 people today, we could enhance our monitoring responsibility. That's what it intends to convey, that specific slide. The second question you are raising, I think I agree with you. But we always agree.
You must say that there is in the headquarters. You are right.
Yes. The question about assisting to cut down on the numbers of people whose sentences are low and therefore they are cutting, they are less risky. It's a high likelihood. I'm trying to be cautious about what I'm saying here now. In terms of the law, any person sentenced for that period of time, the head of the center can at any given time convert that specific sentence into. But of course you have to be always mindful of the fact that it's a judge or a magistrate who have meted out that specific sentence. And therefore our conduct by any form should not be of a kind that it undermines the intentions of the others. But in reality, in terms of aggregates, it will assist quite a lot. I think Mr. Salter makes that point earlier on, that the judiciary will have higher confidence in the system, and therefore the likelihood of people going into a facility with 3 month sentences may drop quite significantly. I of course I agree with you about the problem of those people and the fact that this is not about entirely saving. I think the point we are trying to make is that if we were to save it, ultimately, we could use those resources elsewhere if the savings arises. I think that's really the point we were making. The question of Honorable Member Lengwing, it's a very difficult question. I think we're going to pass it when the moment of test comes. About whether or not in implementing electronic monitoring were infringing on the rights of those people. When we were in, I can't remember, what they do there is to allow offenders to volunteer for taking. And of course everybody goes there because it's better to be outside than to be inside. So they've used, depending on what their constitutional provisions are, they've used different sets of incentives to encourage people to opt for that system where rights will have been infringed. But at the moment, as you know, the Correctional Services Act has made provision for the minister to regulate for tracking and taking of people. So we're using that law, but we'll pass it come the day of the test. We'll also try to seek legal opinion about whether or not the constitutionality of that law. So we'll go, yes, all these things will go together. But as I say, the Act at the moment does make provision for that. It's a very difficult thing, the issue, Chairperson, of the rural areas and the physical addresses. But if we are, for instance, to assume, and this question was not answered sufficiently self-raised earlier on about precision, and I think that's exactly the question you're raising. How precise is it? Because if it's precise, just the address does not matter. It will give us within a radius of 5 meters or so, but I still want Jeff to answer that. So we know that we are 5 meters away from at any given time, and so we can see assisted. But I think the point I'm making is that we should always employ the services of Makhosi to assist whenever it is necessary. And I think that is part of the intention, to involve the community as much as possible in this way. And the issue of electricity is almost like starting to crawl again, and because then this issue comes over and over. We have said it's a problem, not because of our current issues. It's a problem because there are still households without electricity today. And if the deployment of this system is dependent on you having electricity because something in that bracelet has to be charged, and therefore it means you must have electricity at home, there is a likelihood that you may not benefit from that. And so we said this thing is a challenge for ourselves. It's not only entirely as a result of that. Of course, the current problems might exacerbate it, but our own situation at the moment remains still an issue. And the list of countries, this is not all. I mean, there are many countries. I think Jack has made that point earlier on that we are not, we are just giving an example of five at the moment, but there are many countries that use this thing. And this, the issue of electricity, telephone, accessibility and so on, we have said this is what has delayed us. At the moment, you've got satellite technology, we're not entirely dependent, you've got mobile technology, no, we're not dependent on the telecom line. So technology has moved such that we're dependent now on the network of the, and today, and it was not the case 8 years ago, which is why we could not continue. Thanks. I don't know if you will allow Jeff to answer the question of the second.
Thanks. Maybe let me start with this other side saying, I mean, one of the arguments we used to deal with around technology was the fact that is this really justified, maybe in a developing country like us, to invest millions on technological infrastructure while maybe we are still dealing with issues of such as water, sanitation, all this. So this is only an argument when you want to use, invest some millions on projects like this. And I'm raising it also just to say that maybe that's also another reason why we did not move this case, but why also other countries, you know, have not just taken up the monitoring of such a case. I think as a country, when developing, deal with some of those arguments, and at a point where you have sort of won that argument, that we need to deploy ICT infrastructure for us to be competitive as a country. That's when you can start getting huge investments in technology. But having said that, let me go to the question that was asked by the Honorable Self. And I'm sure most of the Honorable members here have a GPS in their car. Most of us have been in a car that has got a GPS. I mean, if you have seen the accuracy of that, that tells you that, you know, the next 100 meters will be able to send that. That's the kind of technology that will be used. You know, you can use GSM, you can use GPS, and you have seen the, some of the cellular operators talking about, look for me, you being able to locate your child. So the technology is there. It is very, very accurate. And we are in a position to deploy that technology because it has advanced so much. And that accuracy taking, I think, has been dealt with. As well, the devices that you put on people are generally tamper-proof. So if I tamper with this device, I take it off, or I cut it off and all that, it will be able to send a signal to say, somebody is tampering with me, this person is tampering with me, so it means they want to do something that they are not allowed to do, or go into a zone that they are not allowed to go into. So it will send that signal which allows us to respond, you know, in time. So the technology really is not our problem.
Thank you very much. And I'm sure that this, we have enough questions on this one. We'll go to the next but let me, the department is raising the issue of budget, and he is appealing as well to the committee to assist in getting the necessary funds. I don't think that for 1 minute this committee will oppose such a thing, especially when it comes to the overcrowding situation in our country, in our prison. I don't think that we will monitor this thing, but I'm very much sure each and everyone will support a plan to deal with the overcrowding situation, two, not to put people in prison who have not who is not a danger to society. We don't want more criminals. We want rehabilitation to take place in our prison. And one of the ways that we can do that is really to make space for our correctional officials to do that by taking out all those who is not a threat to society, so that rehabilitation must start and implement this thing. I'm very much sure that the committee wouldn't oppose such a move in asking for more funds so that we can implement this thing. I'm very much happy. Bishop Tolo is correct to say since 1999. I'm very much happy that at least now you are seeing the light of day, and we will support that. Members, let us go over to the next issue, Mr. Mzeki, inmate tracking. And I'm sure that there's a lot of questions waiting for the inmate tracking on that. I know Cindy will ask questions about Devon West with inmate tracking.
Let me go through the presentation with you. Just a quick recap, Shepherd, around inmate tracking. I'm not going to spend too much time around the background to this issue, because I think we've been with you all the time around why we have inmate tracking. But you remember that its main intention was to optimize the use of facilities, and its biggest target, almost exclusively, was to improve the management of the awaiting trial persons. To be able to assist in the scheduling of people who go to court, enhance our accuracy of knowing who exactly has to appear in court when. So this system was in operating dealt with two things. One was to track the whereabouts of the person. The second was to identify that the real person is the one that goes to court. To track whilst you're within the facility and get you as the right person to go to court. That was the basic purpose of that system. You also know that the system was piloted in Durbanville and Johannesburg. Inherent to the pilot was a requirement that we needed to evaluate the efficiency of that system. As a result of which, an evaluation committee was established within the department to go and evaluate that. And this really is the focus of this, what we are going to try and talk with you about. That is one part of this thing. The second is that you will know that in the last meeting that we had with you, we reported that approximately, let me get the right figure and not approximate it. Number of 3,236 personal tracking devices in Devon were unaccounted for. So, in the last meeting we had with yourselves, you indicated an interest in this, and invariably the department had a direct interest in this matter. So, what I'm talking to you about here are the outcomes of two sets of processes. One is an evaluation of the efficiency of the system and the outcome of the investigation. When you go to Devon West, what currently operates in Devon West is the identity verification component of the inmate regime. And in Johannesburg, we also have identity verification component of the inmate regime system operating there as well. Johannesburg has got the potential to proceed with the tracking components. They have got supplies, but the supplies are inadequate to proceed. And therefore, they had to take a decision about whether you proceed with inadequate supplies or you wait for adequate supply of the central tracking devices. And so at the moment, in both cases, only the identity verification system is functional for now. The findings of the evaluation committee that evaluated the efficiency of the system came to a conclusion that progress in Johannesburg was satisfactory, which was not the case in Durban Westville during the period of implementation. Two, that we can proceed in the deployment of some functionalities of the system. In particular, the identity verification part. The reason why it became difficult to conclude that we can proceed with the tracking component owes itself to the fact that the personal tracking components of the tracking component, these are the things that you put on your arm. Those things are very expensive. In reality, what happens with those things is that for every single person that goes to the court on that specific day, that part is lost. It can't be reused. So you have got a group of people in the facility. In Johannesburg alone, at any given day in the morning, close to 600 people move to the court. So it means on that day, close to 600 of those things get lost. So the findings were that it is inefficient. You'll remember that it, we demonstrated to you, it's a very huge, cumbersome thing, and therefore it's non-durable. They also found that where local management is involved, this the deployment of technology is more efficient. But if there is hesitation on the part of management, as it was the case in the Renewal, there are always problems similar to the ones where some of the personal tracking devices were lost. We had one company person which we are piloting with, which in the context of the deployment of this thing, the actual device was almost like a monopoly component. Only they could produce that. When we went into the market, nobody else was ready to compete on those specific products. And therefore, what it effectively meant is that you are caught up with one supplier. You can't go anywhere else. You have to keep on. And so this compromises procurement processes, which we ultimately found, and I'm a bit hesitant dealing with the actual details of that at the moment, which we actually found when we wanted to proceed, which is why I'm saying, at the moment we're sitting with Johannesburg, capable of proceeding, but the supplies are inadequate. We have to make a choice about whether we get locked up into this or we proceed in an alternative food. And of course our decision has been that we need to proceed with an alternative food where we have employed the facilities of CSIR to look into possibilities of developing a local solution. We are very close at the moment to completing that part of the development of the local solution. And so the actual recommendation, which is why we are still proceeding with this thing in Johannesburg and Renewal, the actual solution has been that we proceed with what we have and that which can work. And that which can work at the moment is identity verification component. And as I say, we are proceeding with development of the local solution. Secondly, that we should try and we should also proceed rolling out this identity verification at best to the 12 other facilities across the country at the moment. Our estimate is that if we were to do that, we will account for approximately 60% of our waiting child population through the system in those specific facilities. our current status with respect to this particular project is that we have, in respect of the development of the prototype, the local solution that I was speaking about, we have finalized the development of the specification that we need as one thing. Our intention is to ensure that specific system does not stand alone, but it becomes part of our roll count of the inmates within our facility. And therefore, we intend to integrate that system with our other roll count systems that we're using. CIFA is, at the moment, finalizing the requirements for magic software, and the tender processes will ensue before the end of this financial year. And this magic software is the one which we intend to upgrade to be able to integrate the component of identity verification system with a component in which we keep all our inmates. That is where we're going to try and put these systems together. And as you know, Chatterton, we are managing the awaiting trial project on behalf and as an assignment of cabinet. I indicated earlier on that if we were to roll out the verification system to 11 of this site, this will account for approximately 50% of our waiting time population. So we want to make sure that the areas that we target for management of our waiting time correspond with the areas where the system is going to be rolled out. Before I go into the way forward, let me account somewhat for the lost PDI whatever the cadet. When we left the last presentation, the commissioner instructed the departmental investigation unit to go and investigate what happened exactly there. Their findings were that in the context of what was happening then during the time when the system was brought up, in the context of what was happening, then we'll remember that this was during the 2005 strike. This is when we're rolling out the thing in Telemetry. So we ran short of staff to enforce that inmates should put these things on. You had a situation where you put this thing to the inmate now, and the inmate will break it immediately thereafter. In the absence of staff, their findings were that it was difficult to enforce that specific process as one thing. They also found that the area commissioner of the specific place, Devon Wesley, was non-committal and negligent, and therefore they recommended disciplinary action against that specific area commissioner. So those were the findings, that no specific person could be held to account specifically other than the negligence part of the area commission. And of course, on the basis of their motivated findings, those findings were endorsed and approved. Subsequent to that, 1,500 of those PDIs, accounting for 1.3 million, were found in a situation which, even today, remains completely difficult to ascertain how it happened. And they were finally used in Johannesburg. So although we are saying the total loss generated by the loss of the city as 2.7, the actual is approximately 1.5 million as a result of the fact that those other city eyes you found. Thank you.
Thank you very much, is 1.5 million people there, the people who install the technicians were giving us this figure of 7 million.
Yeah.
It's not us, it's the people who installed this gadget there were saying to us 7 million. So I must be honest with you, I am not satisfied. I am not happy with this response of you, Mr. Bishop Solo and Mr. Wade.
Thank you, Chairperson. I concur with you. I'm also not satisfied. You certainly did hear the amount of 7 million or 6.7 million. I'm also concerned we haven't really been told where Mr. Barker was found. I think we need to know where and how they were found. I'm also very concerned to hear the devices were not told the time that inmates were taking them off. That to me is a serious concern. We were putting them on before they were taking them off and we weren't able to do anything about it. Lastly, my really big concern in the motivation earlier on of the braces can get lost in the process when people are taking from to court. Now that presents me a major problem. In other words, we can identify them when they go out. How do we identify them when they come back? Are we bringing the same people back or are we bringing different people back? Which is really raising some very serious concerns to me, and I would like to give you a lot more answers to this whole question.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Lack communication. But now I can see. It was the same day we visited the gentleman to the hotel. So I was asking the gentleman who installed it. And this is interesting to understand. How many times the power of this thing, how many times? Well, I said, no, I mean, the community was there. I don't know. He should say, I'm in the one day, he didn't go to the place. He just wants money. He was out of the from here. He said, if you were saying 1 kilo or something, he said, no, yes, no, I go for 1 kilo. He just said, he goes like that. Now, Mr. Mungengi will say this thing. Sometimes when they put it in the cement, 1 to 3, cut off. But that gentleman who was showing them, he was using the machine. But this thing is not easy. When they put it in the arm, it's not easy to get cut without this machine. But now, Mr. Jaggy says, sometimes put it in, tomorrow it's fine. It's in the cut off. Now, we don't understand this is not testing. And the social, in the report, this is a day. Now, just one, between you and them. I agree, when the government of the says, maybe communication is just down sometimes. I think she has a something. I also am not inside the one from the
anyway.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my question will be,
what has been the result of the inmates taking in the juvenile prison, gang violence, and escape. In chapter 2, we have seen that the change is the same for now. But we have seen inmates, they are there. They're not just chasing, but are there. So I want to know if chapter 2 is going to be used or not. My second question, have inmates taken results into future problems? If yes, what do you do about such warning signs once identified? Thank you.
We are told that there is a company that is in Kenya, the system, even if it wasn't working at the time. I'm not very sure it was in Kenya of today. But I just want to know as to how much has the treatment spent on maintaining the system that is not possible. And sometimes I really want to fully agree with you. Because when we were in the first, we had a new head of Lebanon, and he said at the time when he came, in fact he came after everything that happened, the loss and everything, so he could not succumb to the loss. But those that were there before him were actually saying that the loss of those guardians were the responsibility of the department and not the institution to say. And the reports that they showed us, they probably said that I'm not really sure. But indeed, I will agree with you that they said to us those guardians that were lost amounted to 7. So that is just one. That is what those technicians told us. And if now it is so less, then we don't have to follow through. So that's what probably is a good correct.
Thank you very much. See, Shoshola is raising the issue of imminence and our report. You see, with each and every mistake, with each and every visit that we are conducting at minute and report, we have reported because about this thing because we were briefed by the technicians, by the company that has insured, because these members have asked questions, how much is the cost of one place? And we told them. They said to us, now, 20 is gone, and we asked, now, what is the cost of that 20? And they said, plus minus 7,000, 7 million rand. Now, I don't know, Mr. Mjay, when the department is coming now today to tell us it's 1.5 million rand. Shotolo is saying, who is telling us now the truth? Is it those people or the department? Because honestly, we really want to know the answer. We are dealing with the budget of correctional service. And we must account to society out there what happened to each and every cent. And we need this answer.
I think it will remain a very difficult task. I think we are equally as much affected by this specific loss. The questions that you are asking are the questions that we ask ourselves. The word used in accounting to me in particular was there was this mysterious finding. All of a sudden the box was there. It remains strange to me because I want to know if the bug can drop from nowhere. Somebody should have seen somebody that saw somebody that is carrying the bug that is in that room. It must have happened. And it's a very difficult, it's a very difficult thing. And of course, therefore, it's an important question that is raised for which accurate findings must be found. I'm really not going to be able to go into that, but to follow your lead to provide documentation that can come to one figure or the other. I would not do that now because I'll be speculating. And in the manner of doing this thing, I will say that the documentation that we should be able to provide to you should account for the actual number of these riders that were lost, reflected both in our books and in the books of this company, and the actual price per one of the things at the time of the loss, and provide you with those figures. Because my actual assumption myself at the moment is that this is how the 2.7 was calculated. And if indeed the department will calculate it differently from the company, one of the figures is indeed not right. But it's the figure that that we have. And so what I can possibly assure the committee of is that we will provide that documentation as one thing. But secondly, which we are not able to do now, is to provide a narrated report, and if we need to come and provide it here, we'll do that. A narrated report about what the findings were, about how this 150 all of a sudden emerged. We can provide that part of the report as well. So I'm saying those two things are the things that we'll provide you with feedback on. It is indeed not right. I'm sitting here listening to yourself talking and trying to figure out whether our own staff or anybody else is more free at talking to yourselves than they are talking to us, and what is wrong with that? What is it that we're doing differently that generates this sort of different responses? Of course, when they talk to us, there are immediate consequences. And possibly when they talk to and when they talk to yourself, it becomes all other sorts of things that until you have received your report and followed through on it, the consequences are a bit delayed somewhat. Mr. Chairperson, I'm really just trying to figure out what happened between our staff talking to you and talking to us, where they can tell you the truth, possibly, or tell us the lie, possibly. I don't know why this thing happened in that specific way, and why you ended up with answers that are different from us. I'm saying I'm perplexed, but we are accounting and providing you with this report now.
Information was not from the department there in Seven West. Was from the company itself. The company was there demonstrating to us each and everything, and they said, because the members asked this question about this gadget, how much is one gadget? I mean, the members of correctional services doesn't know what is the cost of one gadget. But this person was telling us, the technician was telling us, this thing is 2 rand. What was the price of that thing? 2 rand or 2 rand 50? No, 5 rand. 5 rand. 5 rand. Whenever one is being clipped off, it's 5 rand. Whenever. Each and every time when you are putting, and they are throwing it away. They are not using it for solo and indie and what. They are throwing it away each and every time. It is not the members of the department who are telling us that. It was the company and the technician itself. Yes.
Followers that came up once. But every place where we hit it, one of, I don't know if it's the option of minister, next, every place is there with us. Now, I think maybe also presented it around the minister, she did. But now I think maybe that person is going to report the minister or the department. Because everywhere we are, he's there. When they're talking, when they're asking questions, also he's there. I'm not talking about
I think you have a law one then.
Yes. Now, I don't know if there is why he was. Because that person, I think, I don't know if the department who paid the hotel and transport was using this. The Abbey's car and the hotel and all those things. Now, we don't know if now Mr. Mazay, they don't know also. I don't think so. Because our own minute, I think all we have your own minute. Why you don't know each other?
Very, very important
question. And it's true. Because, you see, this person has been sent by the department or the ministry. And this person must report to whoever we are sending with us. Why is this person not, what is his minutes or his report saying to the commissioner or to the minister? What does he say?
Chairperson, thanks. I don't know what how I communicate at this point, but I want to move away from it at the moment. It was definitely not intended to suggest anything about, it was really for me saying we find this information immediately there, but it's one set of information that we find, we move in there immediately and then find this sort of information. But I understand that in this specific case the information came from the company. Just going somewhat to the question that the bishop asked about the inmate rating and so on. My general suspicion is that our facilities are not a kilometer long. They are much smaller. And so often when people ask, it's relative to the circumstances, and our circumstances are such that the distances are shorter. Because we are dealing with tracking of people inside the facility, not outside. And so that might have been a relative answer to deal with the specific situation. But if the question was as general to say how long is the reach, anything could have been possible, including a kilometer and so on. So I can't account with anything. But to really say that what we found was that it was effective in tracking people within and inside the facility. I think the question that Cindy, honorable member, asked are a bit difficult to answer. If there was a counter, all I was trying to do is really to say there was a departmental investigation unit that was charged with the responsibility to go and investigate, and these are their findings. And in their specific case, their findings included suggesting that there were circumstances there that made it impossible for them to attach responsibility to anybody. That's what they are saying, and those are the outcomes of their investigation. I'll ask Mr. Shulubani to answer the question around the maintenance contract and possibly Nengonya's questions about whether inmate tracking has reduced escapes and assisted in tracking detection problems.
Comment on a different question. And I think one of the honorable members asked us when we were implementing initiatives, we were specifically focusing on checking
how we can have the technique within the equation of the stuff. And therefore, what we needed to do whenever they went out, and our focus was that they are the people that are moving them out all the time, because they go to court, they are called for visitation, the police come there looking for them for further investigation. So we needed to know exactly where they are so that we can call them. Now, when they go out in the morning for court, we had to identify them using the device that they have on them. And after identifying them, we remove the device. We know this is a person, this is the guy that is going to court. We identify him positively with the TikTok mappings and all that, and then we take him out. So we remove the device because we are not sure whether he's coming there or not. So we wanted to manage the issue of erroneous releases there, and the person goes up. When the person comes in, now the admission process is in the person comes back because they need to identify themselves with the fingerprint police record that they are now there, but we assign them a different device that can then be used to check them. I just wanted to clear that misunderstanding that I think one honorable member said the device is to get off on the way to court. So we removed it after identifying them, and then when they came back to us, the other issues about the ease of removing the device from somebody's hand, and I think one of the honorable members raised that question. It's not easy to remove the device without tampering with it. That is to augment the tamper-proof device. So there are probably a number of ways of removing it. Any other way of removing it without the alarm would go out, but our members, either because they won't drive or whatever they didn't care, they simply did not respond to the alarm. So there are ways of removing it, but whenever you remove it, it will set off an alarm which will then the control room show that so and so has tampered with the device. So then our system would not respond to it. So that's the other question out of the way. The other issue is about there are two things here. One is the PCG, which is for something like my watch. And my watch has got this at the back here that this cover. This cover here at the back. When we every time we open, and this is the part that we are talking about when you take the breakable part. Remember you open the watch. Whenever you remove the watch, the watch is supposed to be the base case. That is the part that was traded before the time. And then that is not to be used. But to then remove the rest of the system. Now that is the part that was traceable, that's the part that was talking about to rest. So every time you're throwing away that to rest, you could only use this one. And that's really one of the reasons why in our game with the PSR, we said now we want a device that's not going to be in that portion that is going away from the time. We don't want this thing to be broken at the time so that we don't use it. We want something that we can use it with most of it. And those are part of the recommendations of the team. So it's just one form of clarity that I wanted to make. Now, the question around whether ICS is used and the environment, that is our community, because we are able to, I mean, we are not really done a very specific study to say the gang violence and the case has gone down, but because if somebody is checked, if somebody wants to escape, and then they wanted to go out of the zone where they are allowed to be, the temper, if
would have raised an alarm and then how to do that response. That we have not yet determined. We did not do a focus study on that. That's what the system is doing. The last question, which is about the company exponent getting in paid for a system that was not working. And that, of course, yeah, for instance, when we bought it and went into a contract with this company, and that contract I think was for a certain number of years and some months. So when we discontinued, because of the management problem in Japan, that contract was still valid. And therefore, within that time, we had to pay that maintenance. I do not know but we wouldn't be able to provide those figures. But that is covered within that 88 million that we said we spent on the system. I mean, that 88 million covered both the installation of the infrastructure, it covered also the programming of the TCG, the stress, and all the reusable components. So it also covered the maintenance. For all that time. So I do not necessarily have the figure that says for the time that we discontinued the system, the maintenance was, but we could get that figure in terms of how much we paid.
We must find out so now. Why is it because maybe if we can look in our men and then it's a report. If that one is 7.7 million or whatever, that matters. That one's 1.7 million. We must find out why. Who is taking it? Why is Captain J don't know about that one? They know only 1.7 million. They don't know 7 million. They just can't do it. If you are just talking, just saying, then something is wrong. You must show you.
I just wanted to find out if possible for this college to know how far it is open and what has happened for now to the other community. Where is it going? And then a follow up to the question that was asked by Ms. Ngwenya. This inmate tracking system, you are saying that you don't have a study or an undertaking to make sure how many get positive. Can you provide us with this information when we meet again? Because we wanted to show what we are doing as this committee. We can't say that we are going ahead with this project without exactly satisfying ourselves if it is fruitful.
You see, the truth is that the two questions which Bishop Tolan answered we are coming back to the budget. We are coming in a week or 2 weeks. The department will appear before this committee. We are not going to leave this issue of the 7 million rand. It will be raised again there. And as Bishop Tolo is saying, we need answers to this question. We can't say, as the department say on page 12,
unaccounted PTGs be written off. It's taxpayers' money. It's taxpayers' money. You can't say there's nothing wrong. We are written off and finished. It's like that. No one be held accountable. It's unacceptable. We can't accept that. We are having managers, we are having officials that is supposed to do this. Don't throw it to the enemy. We want answers to this question. When we are, Mr. Zeller is saying, disciplinary steps be taken against area commission, we want to know what steps were taken against this area commission. We don't want to be part and parcel of such reckless that the department is taking.
No, thanks. I think we can provide information about the escapes of Johannesburg and Devon Westville during the time when inmate raping was there. I really want to appeal that to be understood in the context. Inmate raping was never intended, and when we evaluated, we're not evaluating it against escapes and all that. It was intended exclusively to manage people going to court, tracking them and finding them. Well, therefore, if there are other consequences, we treat them as such as other consequences, but we cannot evaluate the system for that which it was not intended for. So what I can assure you of, Chairperson, is that we will not drop correlation. If there is any, it will be incidental. But we'll provide information to the committee about security incidences in Johannesburg, Medium A, and Westville, that include the escape and others, that happened at the time during which inmate raping was there. We will also provide a report here about the area commissioner. It will be a recent report that will be submitted. We can account to it when it comes to the annual report meeting. At the moment, the area commissioner has been dismissed. And so even if there will be any other thing to proceed, we'll not be able to proceed beyond where we were because of the dismissal. But we'll account that this is where we were arising from that specific recommendation. I've already indicated here that we'll provide information as truthful as we can about the cost of the TDs at the time of the loss and the actual verified numbers of TDs lost. In the same way as you said, we then multiply it by the cost we'll get the figure. I really just wish that if our figure still remains different from yours, that we should be able to find an affidavit from the person who provided a different figure about why that figure was different. My inclination would be to find out why we were allowed to come to a 2.7, which ultimately end up being a report that we cannot verify with you. I would wish to know why that happened. That's one thing. But equally the same about the source in your case about the 7 million. What really would have been the motive of the person to tell you figures that if when we ask questions about for us were different from yours? What really would have been the motivation of anyone of us? I would really wish that we get down to the bottom of that. The only undertaking I'm making to yourself at the moment is that we'll provide you with verified figures for the number of TCDs lost, the actual cost at the time which we can prove through our invoice system and otherwise, which will give you this current figure we're giving you or any other difference. But as I say, if it's different from ours, I'd like to know why that happened. And Chair, I respect your views about this. And of course, we can then engage around it again about the recommendations of the DIU about the writing cost and so on. The only point that I really, really try to make is that if we're talking today about immigration during the strike of 2005, our circumstances and the emphasis we're making will certainly not be the same. In fact, for us, we'll not even be thinking about a lot, if I remember well. We'll be thinking exclusively about that strike. That's not an easy process to go through. And I think it was a very significant moment in the history of this department. It was not easy. And so if it just happened, and I'm certain these PTDs are one of the many things that happened wrong during that time. All others are not accounted for. There are many other things that happened during that strike which were completely horrible. And among them, the PTDs that got lost and others getting found. So I really just wish that we can constantly place these things in the context. But I agree with you that somebody must account for why the loss is happening.
Where the condition of the police were saying that crime went up because of the strike of the security staff here in Parliament. Now you are saying there was a strike, and this whole thing, you must take it into that context. I'm not saying that you are the commission. I attended that meeting of safety and security, and it was the same thing there. But, we are taking the thing very, very seriously. About taxpayers' money. You know, next year we are going for an election again. People will ask us questions, very difficult questions, because Parliament is so unique nowadays. It's open. You see, there is a PMG. She's sitting in the meeting. She's reporting, and this issue is no more secret. They are putting it on. I don't know how to use a computer, but I'm always getting something from them. They are putting it, it's no more secret. There's the media, it's open. And we must account. People have sent Bishop Solo from Limpopo, Cindy Chukunga from Mpumalanga, Mjake Kala from Limpopo, and so on. We must account. For this thing, Mr. Chipido, people will ask him, they will ask him, ACGP. I have seen Mrs. Citizen, people will ask, what, are you writing off seven billion rand and saying that's fine? No, we must address this type of thing. Now, on the first issue, Mr. Mzegi, of the electronic monitoring, you know, you must give also an indication to this committee. You know, Bishop Solo raised this thing of 1999. Since 1999, we must have time frame with implementation of things that is going to happen, so that we mustn't come back and ask other questions. Some of us won't be here maybe next year and so on. But we must leave the new committee with at least something to check when. Can you maybe give an indication? I have said, Mr. Mzegi, I don't see and I don't think that this committee will oppose the implementation of that thing. If budget is a problem, we will definitely support so that you must get the necessary budget. But you must also give us as a committee an indication in when do you want to implement this.
nothing we can at the moment give you projections of what steps you're going to be able. As I've committed, we want to be able at the minimum period is that come the time of MTF budget, whatever enables us to estimate how much we should be ready to spend. So we'll be able to say to yourself that during this time of going to run cost-benefit analysis, it will give us an indication of how much, and this seems to take place between now and that day. That part we will be able, and then we'll say subject to the budget and availability, this is the thing that we're going to do.
Thank you very much for that response. Let me just find out, is the lunch ready or not? Because we have organized lunch. Is it ready? Yeah. Members, that's lunch, but I will really like to thank Mr. Mtegi and the team for the presentation. well prepared documentation, Mr. Mtegi. You must also convey our appreciation to the Commission. At least we have not spent 10 minutes talking about documentation. We went straight into the meeting. But it helped us very much. And I know that you people are having sleepless nights when you must come to the committee. We are not here to come and fight. We are here to come and help, because I said that we are public representatives and we must ask this question. Otherwise, you are going to appear before SCOPA. And for your information, we from the ANC side were instructed not to wait for SCOPA to ask those questions. We must ask you before you appear before school. So when we ask this question, it's not that we are fighting. We want to know what is happening with what is your new budget now? Is 11 million now. We want to know each and every cent that we have approved. Where does this thing this end? So take it into that line. We are with you. We are part and parcel of this family, and we must make sure that this department must do the correct thing. With this word, thank you very much, members, for attending the meeting. Friday, we have a meeting. On the budget. The researcher's document on the budget. Members, it's very much important that we must be there, because Tuesday the department will appear before us. As you know, Fridays, and I'm repeating it, Fridays is not a long meeting, but we want members there. Fridays is not a long meeting. We are going to get the presentation, the briefing, from our researcher. You ask a clarification question. From there, if you have booked for a plane, you will still be in time for the plane. Thank you very much. With this word, the meeting is adjourned. Can I see the study group for two?